The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
With more than 5 million books and other cataloged items, the UWM libraries are an amazing reservoir of knowledge. But like libraries everywhere, UWMs are being transformed by advances in technology and the changes in the way that learning occurs. On this edition of UWM Today, we go behind the scenes to find out how libraries are evolving in the 21st century. Joining us is Eva Barczyk, Associate Provost and the Director of Libraries at UWM, and with her, Marcy Bindi, the Curator of the American Geographical Society Library, which is housed at UWM. Ladies, welcome to both of you, and let's begin with you, Eva. It's not your mother or father's library anymore, is it?
Well, thank you for inviting us to join you and that we can share some things about the library with our listeners. No, it's not. The library really has evolved, and I have a history with this library, UWM, and it's been exciting, and we're constantly evolving. I think let's mention just the visible changes. If you walk into our library now, the first floor has been transformed, and it's actually been 5 years since we've created the Daniel M. Sorov Learning Commons. It's a very vibrant, loud, I'd say, busy.
Nobody hushing people
no,
in the library.
No, we do not. And there is a coffee shop, so there's eating and drinking, group studies, collaborative work. Students don't study alone. So the environment, the learning environment is very different.
And lots of computers, right?
Yes, there's over 200 computers just on that floor alone and different kinds of seating. And it's open 24/5, 24 hours, 5 days a week, Sunday through Thursday. And it's always busy. And I think that's a testament of that we've created a great learning environment for our campus.
One of the things that's missing from the library is the old card catalogs. They've been gone for a while, but for many of us who grew up loving to be around libraries, that was always a source of mystery and maybe some frustration. Everything's online now, right?
Well, not only is the card catalog something that's bit the dust, but also if I look at the overall collection size, the number of journals and books that we have that are digital now, it's exponentially growing. And we've converted almost all of our journals to be online now because that's the way our students and our faculty access information. It's online. And they can get it 24 hours from anywhere, and so it's a great service to them.
Are most libraries evolving in the same way that yours has?
Oh, absolutely. I think we are. I can't say we're the leaders of the pack here in terms of technology, but certainly we're all responding to the way our users want information. And it has to be online for our users, but that doesn't mean that we're throwing books out. I mean, we still have, when you walk in, we have a tremendous collection of books as well.
Yeah, and for those of us who love and get to hold and feel and pick up and turn the pages of those books, thank goodness that they're still physically still there. Let's bring Marcy into the conversation because Marcy, who curates the American Geographical Society Library, also has a connection to a very important physical experience because you are the keeper of the maps, an amazing map collection.
I am the keeper of an amazing map collection that when we talk about the changes in libraries and this notion that everything is online, we are kind of an example of where sometimes not everything is online because we have more than 500,000 paper maps in our collection that still are within our physical building. And we are slowly digitizing some of those, but there are a lot of size and copyright issues that come into dealing with this digitization process for a map collection. So when you come into the American Geographical Society library, you still are able to handle all of the maps that we have. I think we probably have about 2,000 maps now in our digital collection compared to the 500,000 that we have in the print collection.
And these aren't the maps that you have. I mean, the ones that you would love to showcase are not the ones that came out of the glove compartment of mom or dad's Ford or Hudson.
I mean, do have some. We have some of those. We actually have a pretty fantastic collection of old road maps, which is wonderful. But no, the maps that we are digitizing are the rare, more specialized map. For example, our oldest map, the oldest map in our collection is from 1452. And we have that digitized and it's available online. And we have a section of the library that we store all of our rare materials in. And it's a lot of those maps that live in that room, typically 1900 or older, that we are working to bring into the digital side of things to create better access to a rare collection of maps that many people don't get to see at all.
It would probably be helpful to share with our listeners just a bit of history about the collection that you curate, because you truly have a collection that has pieces that are famous around the world. How did UWM acquire all of these?
That's a great question. And so the library itself started when it was a part of the American Geographical Society in New York in the mid-1800s, so 1852. And through time grew as a really fantastic resource for the American Geographical Society to use to support exploration and research on geography and all kinds of things about the world. And so in the mid-1970s, they needed to relocate the library. And so the UWM put in a bid to try to get it, and we won. And so in 1978, the library came here to Milwaukee and has been open to the public ever since.
Eva, from your standpoint, it's got to be one of the shining stars to have this terrific map collection housed or embedded in the greater library building.
Well, it's such a resource, such a unique resource, and it really, you know, I hate to use that phrase, it puts us on the world map, because it is a lot of the resources have been included in the World Digital Library Collection, which is an international UNESCO project. So the uniqueness of this collection is just amazing. And it brings in scholars from around the world to use this. And so as a result, our reach into the global community is enhanced because of this the collection that we have.
Well, and you talk about the worldwide impact. You really do get visitors coming to physically pick up or touch or get within inches of this physical specimen and, you know, maps that are hundreds of years old. Is it? Do you ever get nervous knowing that you've got people breathing on or you know, hovering over these amazingly ancient documents?
Yes. When I first
she's breaking out into sweat right now.
It does. It makes you, you know, it makes you a little uncomfortable to think about that, because sometimes you have to try to not think about that. When I first started as the curator for this collection, I used to have nightmares about some natural disaster happening and the collection being destroyed. And so
one of those terrible
luckily
dreams.
luckily those things don't happen anymore. But, you know, we have a pretty secure area where people are using these maps. But you do think about how they're using them. They go into the reading room area. They're only allowed to have a pad and a pencil, so they can't. There's no food, like nothing. Hopefully, they're not sweating.
But we have
security for the most
cameras.
Part, yeah, and there's security cameras, so it's pretty secure. And I try not to think about that part of it so much, because that can get pretty overwhelming.
What's the advantage, knowing that you're beginning to digitize some of these? What's the advantage of still seeing that actual physical copy?
That's a great question. It's one that's actually kind of on some level difficult to answer. The advantage is the tactile experience of being able to look at the map. You can zoom in on the map when it is online, but just being able to touch it and to see it is a completely and totally different experience. It's the same experience as reading a book on a Kindle or reading a book having it in your hand. There are different ways that you interact with it. And so it's the same thing with a map. There are going to be different ways that you can interact with this map. in a physical form than in a digital form. You can do many different things with it. You can compare it to other maps side by side. We have many other resources within our library that often connect with the maps that we have, and so you can then have those resources at hand while you're looking at the paper map
as well. So a novel or a book that may have been written at the same time that the
Absolutely.
Map was created?
Yep. Or if it's a map of a particular, let's say the American Geographical Society sponsored expeditions that explored the western part of the United States. And so we have some maps from those expeditions, and along with that, some of the diaries or some of the travel logs that came from those expeditions. So you can have all of those different pieces of the puzzle together at the same time when you're looking at the map. So it's a different experience than when you just are looking at this map without context online.
Well, you've echoed the way I feel about maps. I got to tell you, when our family took road trips over the years, I was always teased by my wife and my kids because I would have not one, not two, but usually three paper maps in some form or another spread out over the front seat, because it was so neat to look at you following this route in your mind and at your fingertips. And I don't know, GPS is just not, it's not the same thing. The romanticism is gone with a GPS map, I think.
I agree. But I guess the one thing I always like to bring up about the use of GPS is it is a little less romantic because you are following a set route and you have sometimes little control. You can certainly change the settings and have it let you go where you feel like you want to go. But the interesting thing that I've observed about using GPS navigation is that it will often take you a route that you would not have otherwise gone. And so it might take you into different places of a city or a state or a town that are maybe less traveled. And then what I then start to think about is the impact that extra travel through these areas that in the past hasn't seen that extra travel. What does that impact have on these places? And so it's a flip on it and sort of a positive that I kind of like to bring, because I mean, I like GPS and I use GPS, but as a curator of a print map collection, I have to also promote
sure.
the print.
and I got to tell you, as a guy, I'm frustrated because the GPS suggests that I really didn't know how to get there in the first place, which, of course, all of us guys think we do pretty well on our own. Eva, other big collections, the map collection, again, just one of those shining jewels in the UWM library. What else would you point to as some of the great treasures?
Well, I want to just kind of follow up on the digitizing a little bit, too, because we are taking our collections and digitizing them now. And, you know, there are, you know, we're not throwing out the paper, but we are making them available to scholars everywhere. And so some of the projects we've worked on, we've done a lot of outreach into the community. And I think it'd be very interesting because these are all available online to our listeners. So, for example, something that just got launched today was an online project on stitching history from the Holocaust, you know, the exhibit that's at the Jewish Museum. So we collaborated with the Jewish Museum, and there's a website on the Jewish Museum's website. It gives the history, kind of takes you behind the scenes, and just shows you a different way that technology and an online presence enhances a physical collection. We've also recently launched the Kwaśniewski Collection. That's part of our archives. And that's a collection of 32,000 glass plate negatives that documents Milwaukee South Side, mainly the Polish community, and from like about 1910 to 1940. And those were – the glass plate negatives were beginning to crack, deteriorate, lose – the paint was beginning to the emulsion was peeling off. And so we preserved these images, created a database, and these are available. And I have to say that anywhere we go with this, people find relatives. They see buildings that they recall from their childhood. So it's really a very emotional project that we did.
Tell us, give us a little bit of the background on Kwaśniewski. A lot of people may not be aware that there was a, and I'll use the word character in the very best sense of the word, there was an individual who was way ahead of his time in terms of capturing the moment or a moment in time.
Well, we're talking about the photographer, the local photographer named Roman Kwaśniewski, and he lived on the south side. His studio was right across from the Basilica. And he was a studio photographer, and his role was really, you know, to capture the community. And so people would go there for their communion pictures, confirmation, funerals, weddings. But beyond that, he was so well-respected. I mean, he was an amazing artist. He was invited into the community. So he documented organizations, events, parades. He would go into the community and photograph businesses, openings of new produce stores. He has some famous people that have come to Milwaukee that he was present and he documented all of this. So from the mundane of, you know, the
just daily life.
Yep. And that's why there's no other collection in the United States that we've been able to identify that documents an ethnic community to this extent. And, you know, we know about Chicago having a great Polish community, but they don't have a collection like the Roman Kwasniewski collection. So it's the clarity and the beauty of his photographs are exquisite.
32,000
glass plate negatives, and those are all online now.
And so
we invite the listeners to go out on our library's website, take a look at them, and we also ask for comments. If we haven't identified everybody yet, so if anybody looking at that could let us know if that's a business that they can identify or that happens to be their grandmother. We're still finding that out. It's really exciting.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack in the studio along with Eva Barczyk, who's the director of the UWM Libraries, and with her, Marcy Bidney. Marcy's the curator of the American Geographical Society Library, housed or located within the Golden Meir Library building on the main campus. We're talking about a wonderful, wonderful treasure here in Milwaukee with over 5.5 million copies of books or other documents or artifacts that are all part of this amazing collection. Eva, a moment ago we were talking about digitizing the Polish collection. And as I think, Marcy, about your comments of how you're able to go ahead and share the stories behind these maps or of these maps that you have in your collection, 500,000 maps, getting it all online does change the way that people use libraries. How many people visit you virtually as opposed to walking in the door physically?
Well, we get about 1.3 million people, the footsteps of physical people coming into the building annually. It's very hard to estimate how many people come because they come through different portals, different places, and that same person may be coming in and accessing different points, but it's millions. It's millions and millions. So I can't even begin to guess how many come in, because some come into our databases and to do research, but others just come in to look at these digital photographs or, for whatever reason, they're looking for information.
Anecdotally, do you hear, Marcy, from people in other parts of the country or world who are sort of checking your stuff out online?
Actually, we do. So one of the great things about the UWM libraries in general, particularly in the archives and in the AGSL collection, is that we have these really fantastic photographic collections. And so within the AGSL, we've got a pretty significant photograph collection as well, which we are digitizing and putting online. And like Eva said, with the Kwasniewski stuff, we also don't really have a lot of identifying information for some of these photos. So we put them out, and we hope that people are looking at them and getting back in touch with us to say, hey, this is this place or this person. So I was at my desk one day, and the phone rang, and it was for me. And so I get on the phone, and it is a man calling me from Bolivia to tell me that we have incorrectly identified one of the photos in our collection as being an airport in some other area of Bolivia, where he's telling me it's this airport in La Paz, and he knows that it's this airport in La Paz because he was there the day this photo was taken, and was a part of this entourage that was going there. It's part of our Harrison Foreman collection, and Harrison Foreman was a photojournalist, and we have a very significant part of our photo collection belongs to our photographs by Foreman, and so he remembers when Foreman came to to Bolivia. He was there, and so he was calling just to tell me that, you know, we just needed to change the place of this airport.
I love it. I love it. I can imagine some of our listeners right now saying, you know, the next time I've got insomnia and I'm up at 2:30 in the morning, I could get on and just start doing a deep dive here, right?
Absolutely. Today, because it's so cold, we put it out on our Facebook page and I put it out on my Twitter account. We have a Flickr. The AGSL has a Flickr page of photos that we're trying to help get identification on. And one of my staff posted it. You know, if you're shut in from the cold today and you're not wanting to go outside, help us identify some of these photos.
No password needed, no membership.
No, so. No, that's, you know, one of our goals was to create as many of these collections online and make it open to so that everybody can benefit. We see this as a wonderful resource for everybody.
You know, a few years ago, there were stories. I'm sure you saw them, read them closely, Eva, in your role. There were some people who were suggesting that as we move to a digital world, that the need for libraries will disappear. Who will need that if everything is available just by going to Google and typing in your query or question? Not true?
Oh, I'm so glad that rhetoric has gone by the wayside. I remember when that was being discussed in all the national magazines. But I think people have recognized that with the amount of information that's hitting us. I mean, like we're like it's like a fire plug. We're trying to drink water from that, and libraries can help. You know, segment the information, identify the information, and kind of separate the true from the, from the made up, and can guide our users. And I think that that is still a much necessary role that libraries play, in addition to continuing our traditional role of preserving information. And so, whether we're keeping the paper books or the digital collections, you know, we still have that. That role of preserving for the future.
Well, of course, in addition to curating, housing these amazing collections that you have at UWM, because we are connected to a university, there is also another role that the library and the university plays, and that is training that next generation of curators or librarians. How has that changed over this last decade or so, given what's happened with technology and changing behaviors of the consumers?
Well, first of all, we have a very robust internship program for students in the library program. But also, we reach out to most students, and we have classes in which that the students are learning how to do research, and our librarians are very actively engaged in that. And I have to say, with the students who come in into internships, they have greater technology skills than I do. So I rely on them to help me.
Marcy's nodding also.
Yes.
You both are very young ladies here, and you're saying that the even younger ones are passing you by?
Yes. Yes, they are. It's a little uncomfortable to be in that position, actually, because I've been a librarian for 10 years now, and so I was once that young whippersnapper coming in with the more technological skills than my predecessors. And as an intern, it was the same thing. I had all these savvy technology skills that they didn't have, and now here I am finding myself in that position that some of these students that are coming in have these savvy technology skills, and I'm like, I'm going to have to ask you what you're doing because I don't know about that.
Well, in fairness, though, you, unlike a lot of the kids today, did not celebrate your first birthday getting a smartphone, right?
No.
my 2-year-old granddaughter picks up my phone and suddenly is whipping through photo files and playing videos and scaring the heck out of me because at that age, she gets it.
My 14-year-old grandson plays on my phone, and it just amazes me. He knows how to swipe.
Yeah, and I think on some level we're kind of at a disadvantage because the speed of the technological advance has gotten so much faster than it was, you know, even 10 years ago. So even trying to keep up with everything that's coming out is difficult. And so, you know, here we've got kids, little 14-month-old babies, and however old your grandchildren are, just picking it up and moving along. And it's happening fast.
I've got a question for both of you concerning how you put your arms around what's coming out of that fire plug. And let me start with you, Marcy, first of all. We talked about GPS maps and the fact that you've got, you know, now this virtual presentation that and what you see on your screen may be different from my screen because of a slightly different address that I put in. Is there any way to capture the maps that are being generated instantly through these mapping systems?
You're asking questions that keep making me sweat. it's almost impossible to be able to capture all of those maps. It is something that I think about a lot because there is so much that is out there, and I, as a librarian, I feel like we need to capture it all and collect it all, but with the understanding that that is virtually impossible. And so you just have to set some priorities and say, okay, we're going to focus on this, this, and this. And you just have to let the rest of it go.
And how about you, Eva, when you think about all of the novels, the self-publishing that's taking place right now? How in the world do you make decisions on what to go after, what you want to keep, and what you just have to let go, as Marcy said?
And you have to. I mean, I think part of it is we have a collection policy and we decide what's, you know, what serves our campus, where the research is going, where the interests are going. Now, we do have some software that captures web pages on campus to preserve that because, you know, used to be, you know, all paper books that, you know, a department would put out. And so we do. But there are other things that, you know, one hopes that there are other institutions that are capturing some of this, and there are collaborative projects that deciding who's going to keep what.
In 100 years, will there still be books being put into production or paper maps still being created?
Well, that's a tough question. I'd probably say yes.
Yeah.
There will be.
I think there are some.
Like, I think of particularly in our special collections, we have artist books, and they're so unique, and they're an expression of art. I can't imagine that those would go away.
The reason I say yes is I look at my kids. I've got a 25-year-old and a 30-year-old who have been in front of screens for you know, a decade and a half, 2 decades. And when I see them reading, more often than not today, for fun, for recreation, for relaxation, it's a physical book. And so my gut says that there still is a place where you can escape that buzz of bewildering information in the virtual world. In terms of next steps, Marcy, we're just as you take a look at where the Society's collection goes, what's happening? What do you see happening in this next year?
Well, one of the other portions of what we do in the American Geographical Society Library is distribute data sets to the students and faculty for use in computer mapping. And so that is going to be a focus for us because we're looking at new open data standards, et cetera, and just sort of transforming how we distribute that data.
And then as you wrap up, Eva, in the next year, any big projects coming through for the library?
Well, we are in conversations of how to take the success of the Daniel M. Sorif Learning Commons and refurbish some other areas of the library. And, you know, the commons was a focus on undergraduates. Now we're looking at faculty and graduate students and research. So, you know, that's on the horizon.
Well, we're going to have you both back on again because clearly we have a lot more to talk about. Next time I'll try not to make Marcy sweat quite so much as she thinks about the daunting task of shepherding all of these amazing collections through and provide the access to them. But right now we'll end it here by saying thank you for a wonderful conversation today.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Eva Barczyk, who's the director of UWM Libraries, joined by Marcy Bidney, curator of the American Geographical Society Library, which is located on the UWM campus. Well, that's all for this week's edition. We will see you next week at the same time here on UWM Today. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.